I'm available to start at right tackle.
You can't see when I have clothes on.
Right. Well, there's not an even playing field. There's never been an even playing field. There never will be an even playing field.
But... What shampoo do you use on your hair?
You don't need to be Superman to play in this offense.
You're listening to The Red Zone.
Welcome, Badgers fans, to another episode of The Red Zone. We have Zach Heilprin back with us from The Zone. How you doing, Zach?
I'm doing great, man.
Yeah, we're good. We're glad to have you back.
Appreciate it.
The man who predicted a 12-0 season
we're a quarter way there.
Before the season started. We are a quarter of the way there. How you feeling about that prediction right now?
After the first two games, I wasn't feeling too great about it. I'll be honest. I wasn't. But, you know, the way that they moved the ball, especially against Florida Atlantic, they just weren't able to punch it in. Kind of felt that everything was there. And then they went out to BYU in a game I think a lot of people thought would be closer. They don't. Obviously ended up being that kind of, and I've said this a number of times already this week, but they are who I thought they were. Channeling my inner Denny Green here a little bit, they are who I thought they were in that game. Because I think we both saw that during fall camp, right? I mean, we saw them play at that level and kind of do what they did to BYU much of fall camp, and then for it not to show up the first 2 weeks, we're like, oh boy, what did, you know, is it us? Is it them? Like, what did we see? But I'm feel very good about it, actually, considering what we've seen from some of the other teams in the West.
Seems like some of the pollsters aren't really, you know, too convinced by this team yet. I mean, they've dropped a couple spots. I mean, a lot of it has to do with probably some other teams getting big wins. TCU over Oklahoma State, Georgia over Mississippi State and Notre Dame. What do you think this team needs to do to kind of make a statement? Because, I mean, you look at their upcoming schedule and they really can't do that for a while. But I guess if they keep winning and they're 8-0, 9-0, then people will probably take note then. But do you think it's a little bit different than last year as far as, you know, they had those opportunities? Even in losses last year, they made statements. But do you think that's a little different for them this year?
If they could somehow get the schedule from last year or this year, they'd be much better off. No, I'm kidding. I'm saying, can we switch schedules? Because that's how I think they can get, you know, onto more people's radar. But they don't. They don't have it. And unfortunately, I mean, to me, it would have been better for Iowa to win the other night and beat Penn State, simply because you play Iowa. There's no guarantee you'll play Penn State at any point. I mean, if they win out, you'll play in the Big Ten title game. But you need wins now. You need nice wins and big wins now. And to, you know, that would have been nice to get Iowa, because Iowa moved into the top 25. The only thing you can do is beat the teams that are on your schedule and beat them bad, and that's what I think Wisconsin has to do. But their one marquee win is BYU, and BYU I don't think is very good. So there's really nothing they can do. They've made their bed, and the Big Ten's made their bed in terms of the schedule and how it all plays out, and having that many teams in this league where you don't get to play the top teams every single year, and with no Ohio State, with no Penn State, you know, no Michigan State. I don't even know if that's a big win anymore. You know, those are. It's going to be very difficult for you to make an impression. They don't have it this year until they get Michigan later on.
Yeah, I guess that's the thing is when you have the playoff committee, as long as you get those. I mean, by the end of the season, they could have a win over Michigan. They could have a win over Ohio State or Penn State, if we're talking about them making the playoffs. So, but you make a good point. Like BYU is probably a. I mean, I don't think they're very good. So it's still kind of hard to get a gauge on exactly how good this team is.
They could win out. BYU could win out and still wouldn't mean anything because they don't play anybody the rest of the way. They don't have any more Power 5 opponents. Like, that was their last opportunity.
I think they play Mississippi State.
Do they?
They do. So that would be a decent win.
Wasn't that their fourth game already?
I don't believe so, but I could be mistaken.
They played Portland State. They played...
Yeah.
They played LSU, they played Utah, Wisconsin was game number four. They are an independent, so I guess.
They're independent, yeah.
So you can do whatever you want, but I don't think they're going to be Mississippi State, but go ahead.
Okay, yeah, just wanted to throw that out there.
Okay.
But yeah, I still feel like we don't have, like, you know, the full gauge of how good this team is. And it seems like to me that just from watching it play, it seems like the ceiling is higher this year, and the ceiling for their offense is a lot higher.
Yeah.
With, you know, explosive players like Jonathan Taylor. I think Danny Davis was a surprise. I didn't think he would contribute this year, and he looks like, you know, I actually looked at the stats the other day and it said he only has 3 catches this year.
he feels like
he has 15,
right.
But you know, he's drawn a couple of pass interferences, and you know, he's been a threat down the field, and I think that's, yeah, I mean, they have some things offensively that they didn't have last year. When you look at I guess Hornibrook's game against BYU, I wrote something in my film room series last week about how that, you know, the pass protection that, that Wisconsin had really, really helped that, that big game for him. He had a ton of time back there. BYU also didn't bring a whole lot of pressure in that game, but how real do you think this is for Hornibrook? He's sitting there with through three games with, I think, 700 yards, 8 touchdowns, and 1 interception. He probably can't keep up that pace, but do you think that from what you've seen, he's a much improved player from last season?
I think he is. I really do. I think, I mean, 8 touchdowns, 1 interception. He had 9 touchdowns all of last year. You know, yeah. So and his passing yardage, he's been over 200 yards every game this year. I know they're all non-conference games. I get that, but he wasn't doing that last year in non-conference when he got. And I know he was splitting time with Bart, but they weren't throwing for 200 and running for 200 in the non-conference last year. I think they did it once, and that would have been what was the second game against who was it? They played in the second game last year.
Was it Akron?
Akron. There you go. That was, you know, one of the only times they did it all year. So I think he's taken a significant step up, but I also think it has a lot to do with the wide receivers taking a significant step up. You know, talking to former quarterback John Stocko. We had him on our podcast, but he talked about how he saw last year routes were being, like a 15-yard out was being run at 12 yards, and the wide receivers were doing that. And as a quarterback, you don't know what to expect from play to play. If those guys aren't running the routes that they're supposed to be running in the way that you practiced them, there's going to be issues. And he's not saying that Hornibrook and Houston weren't at fault for any of that, but the wide receivers needed to take that step up, and I think we've seen that. You know, Quintez Cephas, A.J. Taylor, Danny Davis, Jazz, they've all stepped up as route runners and become more accountable. And I think that has a lot to do with, certainly with Ted Gilmore, the wide receivers coach. I think he's fantastic. I think he might be the best assistant, you know, combination recruiting and on-field assistant that they may have, you know, just for what he's been able to do. So, yes, Hornibrook is better. Can he sustain this? Competition picks up, you know, obviously, but there's no reason that he can't, you know, challenge Joel Stavi's touchdowns, the 22 touchdowns he had as a sophomore. There's no reason he can't challenge that. And if he stays on this, pace. He's gonna break Russell Wilson's single season record for touchdowns, and he'll be the only second quarterback over 3,000 yards. Those are pretty significant miles. That'd be pretty significant. I don't know if he'll get there, but he's got that opportunity. He's got the chance.
Yeah, but the 22 touchdowns, he's already got 8. He's got, you know what? I guess if you include the Big Ten championship in the bowl, it's 11 more games to get 13 more. I think it's, you know, quite attainable. So
I think it's very attainable. But I'm saying is the 33 touchdowns attainable? Is the 3,300 yards that he threw for attainable? Probably not.
Yeah.
But
he's not Russell Wilson.
This offense is what I think a lot of people expected the offense to be when Paul Chryst returned, kind of thing. You know, this is kind of what it looked like when it was rolling at the end in 2010 and 2011, when in his final few years. This is kind of what it looked like. Now, again, it's only non-conference. We'll have to see how it plays out in the Big Ten, but you know, the last 2 years have been a struggle offensively, I think, for the most part. And this year has not. They're putting up a ton of yards, and the scores will come.
It's funny how much criticism Hornibrook got after the FAU game, and now one game later we're, you know, talking about records and how much better he is. So well, it's funny how things change.
What happens if you throw 4 touchdowns and only 1 incompletion?
Let's see what happens if let's see what the reaction is if he plays poorly against Northwestern.
Right. But you mentioned the pass protection.
Yeah.
That was as good as they've pass protected, I think, since they've been back, Christian coming back.
I think
back.
So, for sure.
Because he had all day to throw and was able to step into his throws, and he said the same. It doesn't happen all the time, but, yeah, he was didn't take too many big shots. He had taken some big shots the first 2 weeks. Was not the case on against BYU.
Yeah, and that's what led to his 1 interception, too. It's just the pressure coming off the edge against FAU just right away. And
that was a horrible pass. That was really
good. I'm not blaming... I'm not blaming an offensive lineman for that interception. I'm just saying, like, you know, it was really good against BYU in the first 2 games. It maybe wasn't as good.
Yeah.
So, do you think this is sustainable? Not from a statistical standpoint necessarily, but from Jonathan Taylor, do you think he can sustain the type of play that where we get to the end of the season and people are saying, you know, not a Heisman candidate, but maybe like a, you know, this is a star player that's known nationally.
And the guy's 6th in rushing in the country.
Yeah.
He's 6th in the rush, you know, at the end of the year. You know, you may have to consider him for some awards, you would think, right? I'm interested to see how his legs stay up, because it's one thing to take a pounding and run for 2,600 or whatever he did, you know, as a senior in high school. He ran for a lot of yards as a senior, and I'm sure he's a track athlete, so he's well conditioned and all that. But once you take all those hits, and it's 9 straight weeks now, your body's not going to be able to recover nearly as well as probably did in the non-conference when you're only playing 3 quarters or 2 quarters in some cases. So do I think he can sustain his level of production or his level of, you know, how good he's looked? I think, yeah, I do. He's got the combination. What can he do? You tell me what he can't do. Because he's got the speed. He's got the power.
Yep.
He's got the vision. It seems like he's got the vision. Now, that's still developing, I think, a little bit. He's got the patience. I mean, he's going to get better, which is scary, because he's not all the way there. But what can he do?
I can't really think of anything. I can't really pick out a weakness in his game.
Not right now, no.
And that I've seen.
Yeah, maybe it'll be pass protection at some point. We haven't seen him a ton in that, but that's with all freshmen for the most part.
And I feel like he's, just from the little I've seen, it feels like he's doing okay in that area. Like
he's a willing participant.
Yeah, willing participant at least. Yes.
Yeah.
And that's the first battle. It's not
for sure.
There are running backs out there that are not willing participants. So
I bet you there's very few kids in this country that went from the size of high school he went to, which was really, really small. It was the smallest, I think, believe in New Jersey, the smallest level in New Jersey, and then come into this program, a top 10 program that has been that way for, you know, quite some time now, top 15, and produce the way that he has. I bet you, I don't know this, but it seems unlikely that there's a bunch of other kids playing at such small schools to make such an impact so quickly at a big school like Wisconsin. He's been amazing. He gets an A+ so far.
Wow, A+.
Yes,
it's like your 12-0 prediction.
He's an A+ guy.
But you know, like I mentioned, it's hard to get a complete gauge of how good this team is, and I think maybe more so defensively, because you think, you know, BYU's offense is clearly a mess, and then they played FAU and Utah State, which, you know, shouldn't be scoring many points against this Badgers defense, even if they're not top notch. But you know, I mean, I think you look at defensively, they still have not a lot of point in the second half. Do you think this defense is, as good as last season, even with some of the injuries they've had?
This is why those SEC games to start the season were so good.
Yeah.
Because we could judge much easier what kind of team this was after that first LSU game, the second in the Alabama game, and then the second LSU game. You kind of have an idea of what it looks against a Power 5 team, and really, really good Power 5 teams, at least in the case of the first two teams, or first two games. But I don't know. You know, it's a situation where I don't think that they've showed everything. I don't think they've come out and you break down the film much more so than I do, but the pressures haven't been a ton of them. They haven't brought a ton of pressure, it seems like, through the first few games. I suspect it's a little bit of vanilla.
It does seem that way.
Yeah, where they were a lot more aggressive last year and even in the year before. Jim Leonard is not passive, you know what I mean? Like, he's not going to sit back and just let stuff happen. So I feel like there's more to it, and I think we'll see it when they need it, and see it when it matters a lot more than it really does. Because they haven't been in a truly close game, right? They trailed Utah State. They were kind of somewhat close to Florida Atlantic, but and there was never a doubt against BYU. So they haven't had to really break anything out. I think the offensively, the same thing. I think we could be in for some surprises on Saturday in terms of what they want to show and what they want to come out and bring. Because there's no way that Jim Leonard is all of a sudden going to turn into this passive guy worried about what's going to happen on the back end. He's got plenty of trust in Dakota Dixon and Jamerson and Tyndall and Williams and Nelson to get stuff done on that end. I think we're going to be seeing a lot more pressure in the next few weeks.
Derek Tyndall Wildcat on Saturday?
We joked about that, like in the preseason. Like he just got the jersey on just to make him feel better about himself. Not make him feel better about himself, but like appease him. I think is what maybe at least that's what I thought they were doing. Clearly not. They've used him a couple times, but we'll see if they ever use him in a situation where it's a close game.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. Does anything scare you about Northwestern for Wisconsin this week? Do you see any scenario where, you know, they can hang in this game and pull an upset? Or
Clayton Thorson's throwing the ball well, you know, then that offense is a lot more dangerous. But him running it doesn't really scare me. I know he's a good runner, but it doesn't really scare me. The Justin Jackson is just it feels like he's been here forever. It feels like he's been there forever. Because he ran for 100 yards as a true as a freshman back in 2014 when they beat Wisconsin down there. Had over 100 yards in 2015. Last year they held him down. And I think he ended up with like, what, 40-some-odd yards last year?
Yeah, it was Northwestern did not get many rushing yards last year. I don't remember the number, but
to me, offensively, stop him and you'll be fine, I think. I think you stop the running game, force Clay Thorson to pass like they were able to last year. And it's a situation where I think they'll be just fine. Defensively, is Igwebike?
I'm not sure how to say it either.
But you know who I'm talking about.
Yeah.
We had three interceptions against Stabby back in 14. He's still there. But they're a little banged up in the secondary. So, I think Wisconsin is a much better team than Northwestern. A lot of people thought that Northwestern was going to be kind of like the Cinderella, kind of be like the pick down. I mean, there were some people that picked them.
They were second in the West.
Right, so I think they had like five people that picked them to win it. Certainly didn't look that way again in the first game. Obviously got blown out at Duke and then comes back and plays a little better 2 weeks ago. But, no, Wisconsin should win this game. A 15-point spread is probably about right.
What's your score prediction? Do you have one?
I don't yet. I guess I can think it off the top of my head here.
I don't have one either. I'm going to try to come up with one on the top of my head.
Okay. I think Wisconsin puts up points. But, you know what, here's the thing. For the most part, these games have been close between Wisconsin and Northwestern, for the most part, especially of late. Now, you go back to 2010 where they put up 70 points on them. You know, that's the last time Paul Christ had weapons to be able to terrorize them, and now he's got those weapons again. So, I'm gonna say 38-14.
I was about to say 31-10. So
it's about that.
Pretty close.
And it's about that. I don't think Northwestern's a bad team by any stretch. They're not as good as I think a lot of people thought they were going to be. But I like Wisconsin.
I think there's a chance they're a bad team, but we'll have to see. It's the thing about this non-conference. If you don't place a big non-conference game, then it's kind of hard to. Although, you know, they went to Duke and lost by almost 30 points, so.
And Duke isn't some great thing either.
I know.
So, you know, I don't know.
Yeah. We'll see.
We will.
We're still guessing at this point, just 3 or 4 weeks in, and you think you would know a lot by now, but sometimes it's not so simple. But I think this is where we really start figuring out, you know, these next few games. Even though Northwestern's looked kind of bad, Nebraska's been a disaster, I still think when you get in this into Big Ten play, you start to really figure out, you know, how good a team is and what they can do. So,
I kind of feel like Nebraska, that game all of a sudden becoming a little bit more dangerous with it being at night and with how good they play at night over there. I don't think they've lost a game, a night game there since 2008.
I saw a record that said they were 39-5 in home night games all time or something.
Something like that, yeah. And Wisconsin went there in 2012 and lost. A lot of teams have gone there and lost. Michigan State a couple years ago went down there and lost. It's not an easy place to play on regular day, but you're going to go in there as a top 10 team. Same Wisconsin wins this week, you're going to go in there as a top 10 team. With as desperate as they're probably going to be at that point, that's a dangerous situation for Wisconsin. So I think that game got a little bit more difficult than if there was a game. Like, I was always thinking Michigan was going to be that game that was really going to be a challenge, and then Iowa was kind of going to be that way after I saw them against Penn State. Now Nebraska's probably taking that top spot in terms of schools that might.
Games
that might give them. And I know Nebraska's looked horrible, right?
Yeah.
Tanner Lee's looked horrible. He's gotten beat up. His offensive line is horrible. It's just a little bit different there at night, just like it is at Kinnick. It's different. And you have to give a little bit of credence to the idea that playing at night gives you a little bit extra boost in Wisconsin. We've seen it here with Wisconsin. So I still think they win that game. I'm just saying it gives you a little bit more of a pause.
Yeah. Well, we'll see how they handle it. Thanks for coming on, Zach. We appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem.
That's going to do it for this week. No player interview this episode, but I hope you guys enjoyed Zach. You can follow him on Twitter at Zach Heilprin, and you can follow me on Twitter as well at Jason_Galloway. Make sure you tweet at me your Badgers football questions so I can answer them in our Friday mailbag column, and you can join me for a live chat as well after Wisconsin's game against Northwestern on Saturday. Thanks for listening.